tyranny of the Yazid on that time. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen Nawawi and Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding Hazrat Ali al-Akbar and why the Day of Youth is named after this outstanding personality. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please don't forget to log on to our website at parsetoday.ir. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you throughout my life, ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Aperture.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit. But behind this resounding success lies a dark secret: toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. A prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-block, this is where all the medical testing, the human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on like two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time, because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would put the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing
a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, their new toxic products reach the market. These multinationals all have one thing in common: a culture of secrecy.
You're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. In the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry.
Everybody wanted to go there because of, for the money, for the benefits, and it was secure.
Are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action. Lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world if they would have informed us back then that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't have made it up.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day. Okay. So
all day long, people were coming in?
Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This material is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland, the birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin, levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, the company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow was acting in its own interests, so Dow was trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life here, near the river. This is where she raised her family.
We used to have all trails that went down through here. I don't even know if you can see any of them over here. But 18 years and the land is very fertile. And it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore and they could build forts and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
Nope. We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Bekelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Bekelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007, when tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency. The levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
My oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have 5 kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. Some to a lesser degree and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Bekelter, was a doctor. A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. The results of my husband's, this is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Bekelter's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, 3 times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died. And would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards like Alice Bekelter's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Shuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there's no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They're dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Schwann shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. Up to 3 kilometers from the factory, 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells. Like in Shakya's family home, they've lived in the house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar, a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011, but for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We are looking at human rights through the verses of the Quran, and we see what the Quran is trying to teach me and you. So the verse 63 of chapter 25, Allah says, وَعِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا وَإِذَا خَطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. The servants of Allah are those who walk on earth with humbleness, and when addressed by the ignorant, they say peace. Peace is not just a word. Rather, it is an act. We have to act peaceful towards other people. Responding with words of peace in difficult situations requires patience, empathy, and commitment. Because it is not just words, there is an effort put forward. Now, how can I and you, when we face ignorant people, how can we try to advocate peaceful society and a society that is coexistence? Now, this might sound more practical than theoretical, because actually this is what we need. So sometimes when you are faced with ignorant people, or people who are completely, as we say, off the rail, there are a number of things we can do when we are dealing with them, if we want to respond with peace, because Allah says, قَالُوا سَلَامًا. First and foremost, we have to remain calm. Respond with words of peace requires a calm and composed state of mind. So one needs to take a deep breath and try to remain centered and focused. Because the ignorant people, what they seem to do, maybe intentionally, maybe unintentionally, they seem to throw us out of focus and out of balance. Because a word that they say or an act that they do, it could literally get me angry. And the state of anger, once it takes over me, I might do something harmful. And thus, I'm no longer balanced, I'm no longer focused. So my peaceful manner goes out of the door. So first and foremost, we need to remain calm. Two, we need to listen actively. Active listening is not just a matter of saying, yeah, I'm just listening. Yeah, I'm hearing you. No, active listening involves paying close attention to the other person and trying to understand their perspective, because I can say, yes, they are ignorant, but at least I have to listen to them, see what they say. By listening carefully, we can respond more effectively and respectfully. So not necessarily you have to agree with me, or I agree with you, but at least I can listen to see where you're coming from. And even when I want to answer, at least I can answer you in a proper manner. Because most of the times that we fail to deal with people or speak with people or even reply to them in the right manner, because we speak before we think. We're not listening. We need to listen. The more we listen, the easier for us to reply. Let us take a short break and then we'll come back.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. So we said we need to have an active listening. that requires us to pay attention to the other people. Also, when we speak with people and talk to people, we have to at least use the I statement. Why? Because if I say I rather than you statement, this can help avoid blaming or accusing the other person and promote understanding. So I can say, I understand, or I'm trying to understand, instead of saying, you don't understand. So when you change the word around, it makes a huge difference to the person listening to you. If it's constantly saying you, 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 the person becomes defensive, and thus we will not reach a stage of peace. But if I say I, it makes a huge difference. At least I'm taking the blame, or sounds like I'm taking the blame. So this is another way we can do. Also, we can express empathy towards people, because empathy involves putting oneself in another one's shoe and trying to understand their feelings and their needs. That's what empathy is. By expressing empathy, we can help build and reduce conflict, help build bridges and reduce conflict just by showing empathy. And like I said, we don't have to only show empathy to the people that we love and care about, or the people who share the same faith as me or the same culture as me. Rather, no, because people, according to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, are two kinds, either equal in humanity or brother in faith. So if they are not equal in humanity, they are brothers in faith. If not brothers in faith, they're equal in humanity. And being equal, at least, I can empathize with them, because what they go through is the same thing that I can or I might go through as well, or going through as well. So showing empathy can help in reduce and deflect the situation we're at when we're dealing with ignorant people. And also seeking common ground, looking for areas of agreement or shared values, we can use them as a starting point to finding solution or solutions that work for both sides. Because when I am only looking at my benefits and you only look at your benefits and we're not looking at a common ground, we won't get to an agreement. Sometimes we might have to create something. I have to create something myself just so that the person can agree with, and I use it as a starting point to begin my discussion, my debate, or whatever I'm going through. So common ground is also required. And using positive language. Positive language can help to create more positive and constructive conversations. Avoiding negative or confrontational language and focusing on positive solutions and outcomes have a better understanding. It has a better way of dealing with other people. So we should not undermine positive language. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sadorbat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, salamun alaikum. You are listening to Lantern, and we have a new story. The title of today's story is The Duck in the Manger. A duck asleep in a manger filled with hay was awakened by the cattle, which came in tired and hungry from working in the field. But the duck would not let them get near the manager, and snarled and snapped as if it were filled with the best of meat and bones, all for himself. The cattle looked at the duck in disgust. "How selfish he is," said one. "He cannot eat the hay, and yet he will not let us eat it. He was so hungry for it." Now the farmer came in. When he saw how the duck was acting, he seized a stick and drove him out of the stable with many a blow for his selfish behavior. Do not grudge others what you cannot enjoy yourself.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. I am Beta at your service. And we are at Lantern again. A new story, a new perspective, and a beautiful way of looking at life. The story of today was about the dog and the manger. The same old dark story of the modern world. We all are struggling with, greed and grudge, I think. There is this beautiful quote about being envious and envy, jealousy and grudge. Envy is the art of counting other people's blessings instead of your own. As we saw in the story, the dog, was just doing something out of greed, out of grudge, and it was useless, you know. I mean, limiting other people and preventing other people to achieve their blessings because you cannot see them being blessed, this is so awkward, but at the same time, we can see that in everyday life, in every aspect and part of the life. Unfortunately, sometimes in this story, we are the one who is envious and jealous and prevent other people to achieve the blessings. And sometimes we are the one who is prevented from achieving the blessing. It happened a lot of time to me that, other people try to stop me to do something which was good for me because they thought they would lose something if I achieved that success. I think the root of this behavior is envy and jealousy. Let's define these expressions and emotions which we all, I think, went through in our lives. Envy is an emotion that is largely unconscious in most people, but it can come from being focused on other people's successes and wanting to bring them down because of it. If you're a receiver of an envy attack, you'll pretty much feel really bad about yourself, but without knowing why. It can be so subtle that you may end up questioning whether you have just imagined it. I mean, sometimes you are jealous of someone, but you feel like you're too good to be jealous of someone. I mean, this feeling of jealousy is like a burning fire in your soul that is hidden. And I think because of that fact that envy and jealousy is hidden in our souls, it is more dangerous. It is more dark. And envy is a word that is often used technically with jealousy, interchangeably with jealousy. But there are distinct differences between these two emotions, which I'm not going to through the story. But let's go for this beautiful hadith about jealousy and envy. هلاك الناس في ثلاث: الكبر والحرص والحسد. These three things have destroyed people's lives: arrogance, greed, and envy. I don't know why this beautiful story reminded me of the poem of Bluebeard from Charles Bukowski. There is a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too tough for him. I think it's the same for us. Sometimes we keep some blessings, we keep some beautiful part of the world because we don't want other people to enjoy them.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
But I think at that time, we are blind to the fact that we can enjoy together, we can all be successful. I mean, the success of other people do not prevent you to be successful. We have to realize our own blessings, count them, and be aware of what we are doing in our lives. And just focusing on the road of our life is the most key, the most important part of the life, I think. I mean, we cannot always compare each other to other people. Sometimes you have to stop, think like, okay, I may have a bluebird in my heart too. Why should I keep that? I mean, sometimes being so much up to yourself, being so much killing into whatever you have is the problem. You have to let it free. And I, as a being, as someone who is talking to you, dear listeners, I try my best to be more kind, to be kinder, to share my beautiful moments with my beloved ones. Thank you. for sharing your moments with me. And thank you for listening to me. It was all the time we had for today's episode. And it was all the time. And I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ana bi dhikrillahi tatma'innu al-qulub.
In the limelight.
U.S. companies are expanding in China. Major U.S. companies, from food giants to fashion brands, are increasing their bets on China's huge market in anticipation of Chinese consumers' willingness to spend their excess savings and a quick rebound for the world's second biggest economy. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of WARC.com has covered this story and tells us more. As China reopens and its consumer activity appears to improve, major U.S. companies are once again looking to the country as a key source of growth. Following the end of the zero-COVID policy that had seen China become a patchwork of different standings, some cities open, others closed, often at extremely short notice, China and the United States are evaluating what they could do for each other from a business and economic point of view. For multinationals, China has been a vital source of growth at a time of slowing growth across the Western world. Pre-pandemic U.S. gross domestic product had hovered around the 2-3% annual growth mark, while China's gross domestic product had hovered around 7-8%. While this growth slowed to just 3% in 2022, a return is expected, even if there are numerous policy challenges that the country must address, ranging from a property slump to a slowing export market around the world. Other observers anticipate a wave of revenge spending. But concerns are growing both over the geopolitical situation between the United States and China, as well as the post-pandemic economic uncertainty that has affected the country. Tensions are not to be sniffed at as merely political problems. Marketers will have to contend with local brand preferences and a need for a deep sensitivity in communications from foreign brands. The Wall Street Journal has recently reported that McDonald's plans to open 900 new stores in China this year, while Starbucks plans to open 3,000 new stores by the middle of this decade. Luxury and fashion looks to the recovery of the sector's largest market, China. Ralph Lauren has been gearing up for the reopening by focusing its new store openings in China, according to its most recent quarter. Burberry and Cartier have also noted growing sales in the country. In the packaged food industry, Tyson Foods and Hormel Foods are expanding their facilities in China, with the latter reported in the Chinese press to be building a new factory outside of Shanghai. The return of Chinese travelers is also expected to be globally significant for travel industry, as recent noises from Airbnb have suggested. The Chinese newspaper The Global Times has also covered this story and tells us more. Major US companies from food giants to fashion brands are increasing their bets on China's huge market in anticipation of Chinese consumers' willingness to spend their excess savings and a quick rebound for the world's second biggest economy after China optimizes COVID-19 management. Despite the US government's push for an economic decoupling from China, the actions of US businesses have showed that they still see China as a market with massive opportunities, while many other economies face a slowdown, according to experts. Some American companies have announced their plans to expand operations in China, according to the Global Times. For example, in the packaging industry, Tyson Foods is planning to open two new plants in Nantong, East China's Jiangsu province, and Shaogan, Central China's Hubei province, in the first half of this year. Tyson Foods China and Korea said in a statement shared with the Global Times on Tuesday, 28th of February. US retailer Tapestry, the owner of the Coach and Kate Spade brands, is teaming up with local brand White Rabbit to expand in the Chinese market. The Chinese market is the inexhaustible source of inspiration for the company to seek breakthroughs and innovation. We hope that through more such innovative cooperation, we can bring consumers new inspiration for a better life and bring new strength to the innovation and development of China's fashion industry. Yan Bozek, president of Tapestry Asia Pacific and the chief executive officer and president of Coach China, said in a statement sent to the Global Times. And Starbucks aims to increase the number of its stores in China to 9,000 and double its net income in China by 2025, according to a statement shared with the Global Times. The expansions come as China optimizes its pandemic management along with growing Chinese household deposits over the past 3 years and plans to boost consumption as a main driver of the economy this year. US businesses, particularly those in the consumption field, are setting their sights on China's huge market opportunities in 2023 and beyond. Hu Qimu, chief research fellow at the Sino-Steel Economic Research Institute, told the Global Times on Tuesday, 28th of February. According to the People's Bank of China, the central bank deposits held by households nationwide grew in 2022 by a record 17.8 trillion yuan, a steep rise compared with the growth of 9.9 trillion yuan in 2021. The chief executive officer of Hong Kong Exchange and Clearing, Nicholas Aguzin, said he sees about $2.5 trillion in excess savings that could be used by Chinese households in post-pandemic period. According to Swiss firm UBS estimates, Chinese families accumulated 4 trillion yuan of excess savings between 2020 and 2022. With the optimized pandemic management introduced at the end of last year, pent-up consumption could be quickly unleashed to spur economic development, Hu Qimu said. From the perspective of U.S. markets, persistent inflation there weighs on consumer spending, pushing American companies to adjust their global market layouts and seek alternative markets with steady income. China's economy is likely to grow by 5.2% this year, and a key reason for the rebound this year will be an increase in consumer spending, Stephen Allen Barnett, senior International Monetary Fund resident representative in China, said in a recent interview with the Global Times. Stephen Allen Barnett added, "We estimate 1 percentage point more growth in China fuels 0.3 percentage points of growth elsewhere. This was the average impact. Countries that have closer trade links to China would benefit more." The appetite of U.S. companies to invest in China comes as the U.S. government has stepped up scrutiny over U.S. investment and business operations in China. A U.S. congressional panel plans to look at the role of private equity, venture capital, and Wall Street firms in China as it prepares to launch hearings on Tuesday, 28th of February, according to the Financial Times. The noise from US politicians is unlikely to turn into actual bills or actual laws, and it is more for show. In the consumer sector, the so-called economic decoupling will affect the core interests of the companies, Hu Qimu added.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from...
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though, we learn...
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Today's interesting tip: what will happen on the Day of Judgment if our prayers and our ubudiyah, our service, our worship, and our obedience to Allah is not accepted? So, dear listeners, we are talking about this idea that when the Day of Judgment comes around, what if, God forbid, our worship and our salah, our different various forms of ubudiyah, our service, our obedience, and our worship to the Almighty Allah is not accepted? Now, of course, we should always have hope that despite the fact that our worship is a worship which is incomplete, it is flawed, it has errors in it, and most of all, this worship that we do is not up to par, and it is not what the Almighty Allah actually deserves. For the unlimited power and glory and majesty of the Almighty Allah makes it incumbent upon us human beings to also worship that Almighty Allah and to have ubudiyah to that Almighty Allah as He deserves. But that is not possible, right? For we are human beings and we are in the shackles of existence and in the shackles of time and age and error and forgetfulness and such things. So, of course, we must always realize that this is what the value of our worship is. But of course, we try to continue to make our worship valuable and be able to give something in the presence of the Almighty Allah as ubudiyah to the Almighty Allah. Now, keeping this in mind and, of course, having hope that our efforts and our sincere efforts, of course, will be accepted by the Almighty Allah, at the same time, we must keep in mind that there is a possibility that our worship and our ubudiyah and our salah, which of course is the mi'raj of the mu'min, might not be accepted. Now, of course, a salah or a ubudiyah which does not bring us close to the sacred proximity to the divine presence of the Almighty Allah won't be accepted. The whole purpose of the salah and the ubudiyah is to bring us close to the sacred proximity of the divine presence of the Almighty Allah. And if this is not happening in one way or the